In the update this week, I talked about the multifaceted nature of Scripture, how many times you can go to the same passage of Scripture and being read, not in different ways, but getting different messages out of that same passage of Scripture. Now, there is a book in the Bible where this is certainly very, very true, and that is the book of Jonah. Now, if you'd like to turn over to the book of Jonah, and we'll actually be going back there, so by also encourage everybody to put a marker in there if you can. But Mr. Pippi gave a sermon a little while ago about prayer mentors, and there's nothing like being swallowed by a fish to concentrate the mind and make sure you don't doze off, because he cited Jonah as one of the prayer mentors that was in the Bible. But there are many other areas as well that the book of Jonah is brought into play. The 3 days and three nights. As far as Christ is concerned, obviously you'd go back to the book of Jonah there. God's mercy on Nineveh, and when you're talking about God's mercy, you'd go to Jonah and see the Ninevites and how God was merciful on them. And even if you're looking at 1 Corinthians 13 and about prophecies failing, you can see how Jonah actually gave a prophecy and it actually failed because the people repented. Therefore, the prophecy wasn't fulfilled. But what I want to do today is I want to examine a major theme that you find within the book. And probably, you know, whether it is the major theme or not is debatable, but certainly it is one of the, if not the major theme within the book itself. And that really is the fullness of God's view of a situation and the emptiness of our own. When we look at things, we look in from a human's perspective, from a human point of view. And one of the messages that you will find within the book of Jonah is the fact that Jonah was looking at things from Jonah's point of view, whereas God was looking at things from his point of view, and that was a different perspective. And certainly, and the reason why I'd like to go into this particular one in the sermonette, this particular aspect, is that we don't repeat Jonah's mistake, because quite frankly, we could repeat Jonah's mistake and look at things from a human point of view when God is looking at something in a very different way. Now, we're in the book of Jonah. I hope you all turned there and found the book. And in chapter 1, you find a little bit about it. Let's ask the question, you know, when did he live? Who is this Jonah that is actually being mentioned in the book of Jonah? Well, in Jonah chapter 1, verse 1, it says, "The word of the Eternal came to Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying," so this Jonah is the son of Amittai, and he says, "Rise, go to Nineveh, the great city, cry against it, for the wickedness has come up before me." But Jonah rose to flee to Tarshish. Now, Nineveh is east of Israel, right across. You go right across the Euphrates, right across to the Tigris, and it's on the Tigris. So it's east of Israel. Jonah rose and went to Tarshish, which was Spain, which is the exact opposite direction. So there's something, there's a problem here. You can give the problem. Now, but I want you to notice it says Jonah, the son of Amittai. Now, there's only one other place where he's actually mentioned. So keeping a marker in Jonah, turn over to 2 Kings 14. So go over to 2 Kings chapter 14. And it says in verse 23, it says, "In the 15th year, Uzziah, in fact, it would be, the son of Joash, king of Judah, Jeroboam," this is not the Jeroboam, this is Jeroboam 2, Jeroboam the second, "the son of Joash, the king of Israel, began to reign in Samaria and reigned 41 years. And he did that which was evil in the sight of the Eternal. He departed not from all the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat," that was the original Jeroboam, who made Israel to sin. "He restored the coast," but notice what he did. "He restored the coasts of Israel." In other words, he expanded the borders. He actually made Israel expand out to the days of Solomon and David, the borders. "From the entering of Hamath, the sea of the plain, according to the word of the Eternal God of Israel, which he spoke by the hand of his servant Jonah, the son of Amittai, the prophet, which was of Gath-hepher." Now, Gath-hepher was in Israel near the Sea of Galilee, near the house of Israel in the north. So here is you find out who, in fact, the timing of this individual. And it is the time of Jeroboam II, Jeroboam II. Now, if we go back to Jonah, we find, you know, this individual who's told to go to Nineveh, and instead of going east over the mountains and going east to Nineveh onto the Tigris, he goes in the exact opposite direction. Now, there's somebody else alive at this time. Now, this actual period of time was something between 40 and 80 years before the captivity by Assyria. So probably around about the 60 years before the captivity by Assyria. And you ask the question, well, why did he flee? What was the reason? Why would he go in the opposite direction to the way in which God told him to go? Now, if you turn back a couple of pages from Jonah, and you come to the book of Amos, you find in the very beginning of Amos, it says, the words of Amos, who is among the herdsmen of Tekoa, now that's down south of Jerusalem, which we saw concerning Israel in the days of Uzziah, king of Judah. We just read about Uzziah back in 2 Kings. And the days of Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel, 2 years before the earthquake. Now, I won't go into the earthquake, but it was around the time of Uzziah, when Uzziah actually went into the temple. But Jeroboam is mentioned here. This is Amos 1, verse 1. But the reason why I say that is that to show that he was contemporary. So if you go to Amos 5, you find something actually mentioned in the book of Amos being directed at Israel. He mentions the word of Israel in verse 1. In verse 4, he talks about Israel. And then he says, he goes down into the very latter part of that chapter, and he says in verse 25, have you offered to me sacrifices and offerings in the wilderness 40 years, O house of Israel? Borne your tabernacle to Molech and Chion, your images. Therefore, and here it is giving what will actually happen, what will occur. This is Amos, the same time as Jonah was prophesying, he is also prophesying. Therefore, I will cause you to go into captivity beyond Damascus. And you take a line from northern Israel, go through Damascus or the area around Damascus, eastward, guess who you come to? You come to Nineveh on the Tigris as the first major civilization that you'd come to, the Mesopotamian civilization. So you go to captivity beyond Damascus, says the Eternal, whose name is the God of hosts, the God of armies. So now, when we go back to Jonah with that under our belt, and we ask ourselves, well, why did Jonah, therefore, go in exactly the opposite direction? Why did he go ahead and go in the opposite direction to the direction which God told him? He said, go and warn Nineveh, who was over to the east in Mesopotamia. He went to Joppa, he got on a ship, he went in the opposite direction to Tarshish, which is over towards Spain. And obviously, he knew what the prophecies were about to happen to Israel. And remember, what was he actually prophesying? He was prophesying over the expansion of the borders of Israel. And Jeroboam was actually accomplishing this. He was expanding the borders of Israel. He was giving Israel more territory. But God had said, now you go and warn Nineveh because of their sins have gone up to heaven. And he said, hang on a minute. He must have said, look, hang on a minute. These are the people that are going to come ahead and attack Israel. And he gets in a boat and he goes in the opposite direction. If you find this in Jonah chapter 3, when he says in verse 10, having been forced to go and preach to Nineveh, having been, and what had actually happened, the fish that swallowed him, and it was a fish prepared by God, swam from the Mediterranean right round into the Black Sea, right to the far end of the Black Sea, and vomited him out on the southern shores of the Black Sea, about 200 miles north of Nineveh. And here's this individual, comes out of this fish's mouth, and it so happens that his name was Jonah, and they worshipped Oannes. Both words meaning dove, and guess who Oannes was? He was a merman that came out of the sea every day and taught people. So there was various things. You know, God wasn't mocked in any way when Jonah went in the opposite direction. He actually came and used that to advantage. But it says here in chapter 3, verse 10, it says, God saw their works that they turned from their evil way, and God repented of the evil that he said he would do to them, and he did it not. So the word of Jonah actually failed. But it displeased Jonah exceedingly, and he was furious. He was very angry. Because he'd warned Nineveh, he'd done what God asked him. And look, but I want you to notice what he says. And he prayed to the Eternal. He said, I pray you, Eternal, was not this my saying when I was yet in my country? Didn't I tell you this? This was going to happen. And they're going to come over and they're going to get in hold of Israel. And they're going to punish Israel. That's why I got in the boat and I went off towards Tarshish.
You know, why didn't you listen to me? That's basically what Jonah is saying.
And so he sulks, he goes up on his hill, and he sits, he's thinking, well, perhaps God will actually fulfill what he said. And he said, verse 4, he says, "Then said the Eternal, do you do well to be angry?" And Jonah went out of the city and sat on the east side of the city and made him a booth and sat him in the shadow to see what might become of the city, ever hopeful that the fire would come down, but it didn't quite work that way. And the Eternal God prepared a gourd, probably a castor oil tree, and he made it to come up over Jonah that it might be a shadow over his head to deliver him from grief. And Jonah was exceedingly glad for the gourd. But God prepared a worm when the morning arose the next day, and it smote the gourd that it withered. And it came to pass that when the sun rose, the God prepared a vehement east wind, and the sun beat upon the head of Jonah. He fainted and wished himself to die, for it's better to die than to live. You know, he was really down in the dumps. I mean, he really was down in the dumps. And God said to Jonah, "Do you do well to be angry for the gourd?" And he says, "I do well to be angry even to death." He wasn't going to have it. Because, you know, his idea, he could see what was going to be. These Assyrians, he knew what these Assyrians were up to. He knew that 60 years down the line, they would go ahead and take over Israel. He could see that. He knew Amos's prophecies about beyond Damascus. He was a prophet himself. Then the Eternal said, "You have had pity on the gourd that you have not labored, nor made to grow, which came up in a night and perished in a night." Now I want you to notice that. Here he was having, being upset because of this castor oil tree that came up in a night and went in a night. And he says, look, shouldn't I spare Nineveh, the great city, in more than 120,000 people that can't discern between the left hand and the right hand and much cattle? And the implication is, the inference is, that come in a night and that go in a night. And also that Jonah comes in a night and goes in a night. And that you and I also come in a night and go in a night. But everybody, all of us are human. We come, we live, we breathe a bit, and we die. And that's the end of us. But the Eternal is looking at things differently. God is seeing Assyria joined with Israel, joined with Egypt, as three major nations in the future, in the actual world tomorrow. He's seeing 1,520 years down from Israel when Ephraim and Manasseh would rise. He's seeing the time that we are in right now, today, looking at Israel, looking at the degeneracy that is there. He's seeing the fact that they go into captivity for this second time and then brought back as the model nation, ready to go ahead and fulfill the original commission that was given to them. God can see all that, but all that Jonah could see was what he saw as he came in a night and went in a night. So it is very much the actual message of Jonah is something that we can go to and just be reminded, not only that it's very difficult to pray inside a whale's belly or a belly of a big fish, but also the fullness of God's view and the comparative emptiness of our own.